Okay, so hi, I'm Dove, and I'm here because I'm an addict in recovery, and I'm also a guy who was a yeshiva bacher for quite a few years, and then a person who was learning after marriage for a couple of years as well in yeshiva full time, and then part time, and. And then, excuse me, and then working and learning, in terms of, in order of, number of hours, working was more than learning, and then, and it still is, and, unfortunately, and then, hi, good morning, and all the while, I had Baruch Hashem parents and a home to go to. Bein Hazmanim, and for holidays in general, which usually Bein Hazmanim is geared for holiday time. You know, it's around Sukkot and around Pesach mainly are the two Bein Hazmanims, and then there's the summer Zman, which is another Bein Hazmanim really. So as far as I'm concerned. Ein lanu ela hashla hakadosh, and therefore I want to mention that the Shlach Hakadosh brings in his fantastic sefer on the Shas. He has 10 masechtos. Everything he tries to do in patterns of 10 because of the Aseres Hadibros, and I believe it's 10 masechtos that he has. And he goes through the ten masechtos are chulin, include chulin and Shabbos and psachim and shavuos and tainis, tamid, a couple others in there, and the purpose of these yoma. And the purpose of these masechtas is not to be a commentary on those masechtas ashas, but rather to present a point of view that's comprehensive on the his point of view on the halachas and minhagim and inyanim of the major holidays of the Jewish year. And that includes Chulin, which is just the regular days of the Jewish year, sort of like Or HaChaim, you know, sort of the first part of Or HaChaim in the Shulchan Aruch. And don't forget the Shelah HaKadosh was written during a time that the Shulchan Aruch was probably still not Nafutz B'chol Tfutzis Yisrael as much as it is now, you know, there was still a place for this kind of thing. But he adds in a lot of inyanim and discussion on the holidays, like many other people do. While the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam and the other codifier people shied away from doing that because they wanted to, you know, focus on halacha. So one of the things that the Shlach HaKadosh writes is during, I think, Maseches Pesachim, I think, but I'm not absolutely certain. I don't remember exactly where it is, but he has a discussion about Bein Hazmanim, and he says that Bein Hazmanim is something that has to be uprooted from Klal Yisrael, and it's against Avodas Hashem because it promulgates, it encourages, rather, an idea that there is a break from learning and that there's such a thing as a vacation from learning. And therefore, it's evil. And he says this very clearly and very simply. It's wrong, and it's evil, and it needs to be stopped. And obviously, you see that in the structure of the yeshivas, which there were already in 1600, which is, you know, obviously before Volozhin. So, you know, it's more than 100 years before Volozhin, you know, the Shlach lived. You know, already there was Bein Hazmanim in yeshivas. Anyhow, so I wanted to throw out that point of view into the ring over here because our minig is obviously that we have Bein Hazmanim, Me'ezetam Shiyiyah. I want to bring one explanation of Me'ezatam She'iya, and that is because of reality. The yeshivas know that parents aren't going to send their kids to yeshiva if the kids can't come home for Yom Tovim. They know that parents aren't going to, that the yeshiva bachurim aren't, they have Baruch Hashem families, you know, and sisters, brothers, you know, et cetera, they want to be with, and, you know, especially for Yom Tovim, and the parents obviously also have that. So it's just not practical for the yeshivas to try to get rid of Ben Zmanim at all, especially Bizman Hazeh. In the old days, a lot of people, a kid at 13 or 14 went off to a yeshiva 300 miles away. This was common, you know, and people were much more independent. Some people didn't see their parents for years, and it wasn't because of hardship. It's because, you know, that's the way life was. But now it's just not that way, and, you know, we're very clingy and all that stuff, for good or ill. So Ben Zmanim is here to stay, it seems. Even though the Shlo says that it's a rotten idea, it does present some problems now that we have it. It really does present some real problems, Ben Zmanim. And I want to talk about a couple of the problems, and I want to explain to Hashem why those problems exist, in my opinion, and what it has to do with 12 steps recovery, which is all I've got. And that's what I'm here to share. So, before I actually start, and sort of delineate, you know, the challenges of Ben Zmanim, I want to say, a very short vort that I read yesterday from the Satmar Rav, Zech Tzadok Livracha, in Divrei Yoel. You can look it up. It's the second little piece there, second or third, very beginning shtickle, right on the first page of Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra, which he has a shtickle in there where he brings a Gemara and he talks and it basically discusses two things. It discusses Matan Torah where we said Nasa v'Nishma. And it discusses a Gemara that says Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag Sholem Adorshin Behilchus Pesach or something like that. That 30 days before the Yom Tov Sholem Adorshin in Hilchus Pesach. So he asks a question that the Turei Zahav brings down, which is, why does it say Sholem Adorshin? Why doesn't it say Dorshin? Dorshin Barabim Behilchus Pesach or something like that. Dorshin Behilchus Pesach. What's the Sholin? So I never had the Kasha, really, because I always assumed that Sholin, as you also probably assume, Sholin means that the Rav, who gets up and says Drushis, at least on Shabbos HaGadol, but even 30 days before, he says a drasha which begins with Shilas. He says, Akasha on halacha, difficult issues. He says, well, what do you do if an achbar drags a thing after you did the dika, blah, blah, blah. You know, he asks kashas, and, what happens if you own stocks in a company that makes chametz, you know, whatever, hard kashas, things that, you know, you want to go, and then darshan. And, you know, and through the drasha, he explains Hilchas Pesach and Inyonim of Pesach, et cetera, et cetera. Very nice. So I always assume Sholin is part of the Darshan, or that Sholin means that the people ask the Rav their Kashas, their Shilas, and then the Rav is Darish and answers, what are the Shilas that people have, you know? So these are the Shilas, and I'm going to Darshan. Okay, but he asks the question because he says, because he wants to give an answer that's really, really good, even better than the question. And his teretz is very simply that if a darshan wants to be of use to the crowd, so he's got a problem, because people listen with their heads and their hearts and their ears. They don't listen with the head and heart and ear of the speaker. So how does he know that what he's going to say is going to be heard by the people? How does he know that what he's going to say is going to be understood by the people? And how does he know, so that's the head and the mind, and the mind, and how does he know that what he said, what he's going to say, is going to be useful to the people? That's the heart, that it's really going to be relevant to them. They're going to care about it, and it's going to be understood in a way that's useful to them. How does he know that? So the answer is, he says, the answer is sho'elin. You have to daven. That the speaker has to be sho'el. He has to ask the Rabbanu Shel Olam, please, please, Tata in Himmel, help what I say be useful to this crowd that I'm speaking to. And in this case, to anybody who hears the recording, which is obviously going to outlast me in this world. And that it's something that will be understood properly, that the right things will be said for the person listening, and that the person listening will have the inspiration to actually care about it and put it to good use, and that it will be, and it will make a difference for them. And for those things, we need Siyata Dishmaya. Like we say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can. The things I cannot change are what you care about. You know, I can't change that. So I'm powerless over that, you know. Just like the fact that I'm an addict, I'm powerless over the fact that I am an addict. I'm powerless over the fact that I can't control and use my drug like a normal person can recreationally drink alcohol, but an alcoholic can't. He's just not able to. Whenever he or she tries to, he just ends up screwing his life up. In the same way, I'm powerless over alcohol. In other words, I'm powerless over lust. In other words, I can't successfully enjoy and use lust the way a normal person is able to. Whether it's us or a mutter isn't the issue here. A normal person, a normal yid, a normal goy lahavdil, is able to use lust recreationally. I'm not able to use lust recreationally. And everybody knows the difference without being told, the difference between recreational use and sick use. You know, it's obvious. You don't see a person who's overdosing on heroin 4 or 5 times and brought back to life by Narcan and other drugs and oxygen and who knows what. You don't see that person by the 5th or 6th time that they've been hospitalized, and everyone who knows them hates them. You don't say, and then you say, well, you look in his doctor's notes, and the doctor writes, patient uses recreational drugs. That's not recreational. I'm sorry. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing with me. I mess up everything good in my life when I use my drug lust. And that's not the same as sex, by the way, my lust. Stolen sex, sneaking, stolen stuff, grabbing what's outside me, what's not mine, and what's not truly healthy. Truly healthy, that's a drug. And now, whenever I do that, my demands increase, my expectations increase, all my resentments and paranoia and other goofiness are cranked up, and like anybody who's drunk, you can say, if you know any drunks, if you know or have in your family people who get drunk, who are alcoholics, clearly sick, eventually you, your wife, your friend, somebody, a family member will turn to you one day and say, after so-and-so leaves the room, and go, he's drunk again. And you go, well, I didn't smell alcohol. Can't you tell? He's drunk. This is the way he gets when he's drunk. You know, same thing happens with lust. People around us can tell, and they get irritated, even though they might not know exactly what it is. So anyhow, I'm also powerless over what you need and what you understand. So I need to daven for Siyata Dishmaya. God, help me accept, give me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, which is you. Courage to change the things I can, meaning to say the things that I do understand and share them. and the wisdom to know the difference for me not to confuse the two of them. You know, I don't need to, you don't need me to confuse those two things. So, yeah, anyhow. So, and with that, that's Hashem. The problems of Bein Hazmanim are many. A lot of guys report, and I have heard most of my stuff I've heard from guys, not gals, not girls, women. So I'm going to generally say men, you know, guys, etc., even though it everything I say obviously has, there's no difference between men and women who are masturbating or looking at pornography or you know, phone sex or acting out with other people, or it's all the same in terms of the disease, in terms of the sickness and the insanity and the craziness and the cost. One might be more, one might be less, but in the same gender, it's the same. One might be more, one might be less too. So anyhow, I've heard mostly from guys who are acting out. So occasionally I'm going to just say he or she, or, you know, he or this bucker or whatever, but it applies to both genders, of course. Husbands, wives, it's the same thing. Anyhow, so guys say they come home for Bein Hazmanim and they lose their sobriety, or if they're not talking 12-step Sprach, because they might not be addicts when, you know, Baruch Hashem, they haven't yet been confused by Guard Your Eyes or anybody else that, oh, you must be an addict. You know, everybody who has a Yetzirah, that's Misgabra, Lev B'chol Yom, Vila Moli Ozer, and a Yachalo, you're powerless over your Yetzirah, so you're obviously an addict. No, you haven't been fooled by that silliness yet, because that's Narishkeit. That's not the truth. So normal people have a Yetzirah too, not just addicts. So if you know, people come home for Bein Hazmanim and they start losing their either sobriety, or if they don't speak that way, so, you know, they end up acting their lust out. When I say acting out, I don't mean acting out like you know, drinking alcohol, you know, whatever, yelling and screaming. I mean specifically acting your lust out, what you desire, acting it out, putting it into action. That's how I understand the term acting out. So a person comes home and they lose their clean time. They fall off the wall of honor. They have what a Guard Your Eyes you know, calls a fall, which I don't like that sprach. It makes it sound too passive and too much like you're a victim, which ultimately a lot of people believe, because they blame it on God and say it's the eighth horror or something like that. Anyway, so yeah, you fall, you know, and you don't stay clean, and it's very frustrating. It's extremely painful, and it's scary, because a person wants to stay clean, you know? At least you think you do, you know? Everybody thinks they do. You're from guy. Why not, you know? So you come home. You were clean the whole Zman in yeshiva, and then you come home and finished, you know? So what do you do? What does that imply? What does that mean? What does that mean? Why is that? A lot of guys also find that around Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Aseres Yemei Tshuva, which is right before Bein Hazmanim in most yeshivas settings, they also have a lot of trouble. That's a little bit of a different issue. That's because of the exact reason that Guard Your Eyes is so good for so many people. Is the same reason that Guard Your Eyes is so bad for so many people. And that goes for Yiddishkeit and even 12 steps recovery if it's done wrong. Also, if the focus is on stay clean, stay clean, stay clean, be vigilant, stay clean, look out, watch out, watch out, you know, vigilance, tznius, v'nishmartem, v'nishmartem, you know. If that's your emphasis, then basically it's just like tikkun habris all day long. You're just thinking about your penis. All day long, you're thinking about sex. Thinking about not thinking about sex is the same thing. Being focused on not thinking about sex or lust all day long is the same thing as thinking about sex or lust all day long. This is clear. This is pashut. So if you use it wrong, it's going to bite you in the back, you know? So that's why a lot of people, quote unquote, fall around Aseres Yemetshuva, and sometimes during Bena Zmanim. That's another reason why, because it's a very religious time. It's a very frum time. Sukkah is full of mitzvahs. The sukkah, it's very special, very, you know, there's a lot of hisalos that's expected of a yid, a lot of pressure. It's man simchasenu, we have to be kind of simcha. How many of us have thought through sukkahs, it's man simchasenu, and I feel more depressed than ever. You know, I'm bored and depressed, or I'm upset. Ugh, I'm losing, and then it's over. You try with simcha, you're dancing simcha, but you feel you weren't kind of simcha. That was your chance. It's like a train. It's like a train that you're trying to catch, and it's leaving the station. Gewalt, and I missed the boat, you know? And then during Pesach, it's Man Cheiruseinu, and I'm like, this is my chance at finding Cheirus. And do you feel like a real Bal Cheirus after a Ben Choron, after the Pesach, more than you felt before, really, or not? And a lot of guys don't, unfortunately, because we aren't really given the tools to feel that, and we don't know what Cheirus really is. So anyway, so it's like we think, you know, you open up a sefer like Shalah Kodesh or Reishis Chachma or something, or Haredim, and you think, oh, he's going to define for me in 2017 what Cheirus really is and stuff. Oh, it's Tarek Doshe, it's immutable, you know, it's forever and this. So he should, for sure, it should explain it to me. And it's like, no, actually, it's not talking to you at all. You don't, you know, you're twisting, you're taking a square peg and you're trying to fit it into a round hole. It's not actually going to work for you. So people wonder why they're not succeeding. And that's a lot of the problem. But that's not the ikkar. The ikkar of Bein Hazmanim, the ikkar problem of Bein Hazmanim is not a religious one, in my opinion. The ikkar problem of Bein Hazmanim is really very simple. And I want to give you an example to sort of explain where I get this idea from. I learned in Eretz Yisrael for a couple of years. And during the time that I was in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, I didn't act out my lust during those, you know, during that year and during the second year, you know, I didn't even once, you know. I remember once I was in Yerushalayim and I saw some greeting cards or something, and one of them had a shmutzi image on it, and that's, you know, I saw it in the storefront and I was thinking about going back in to look at it again, but that's all that happened. I did, you know, that's the only maisa that I had. There was a Rebbe's wife during during a Shabbos Friday night, what do they call that again, Onik Shabbos thing that we had in the Rebbe's house. Friday night, very common thing in yeshivas, and his wife was very pretty, and I remember noticing that, but those are the only two mice. I never masturbated myself, and I never looked at pornography in the whole 2 years. But when I came home for Bein Hazmanim, quote unquote, I did once, twice. That's all. Now, normally it was an every day, every other week thing, then every week thing at least, you know, a couple times a week. But now it was only twice during the in-between, during the Bein Hazmanim. And then I was back to Eretz Yisrael for a second year. I didn't realize at the time that part of my main motive of going to Eretz Yisrael for yeshiva was because I was running away from my acting out. And I knew that I would be free of my acting out while I was in Eretz Yisrael. At the time, with my, you know, kid mind that was fed by immature ways of looking at Yiddishkeit, I was convinced that it was because I was an Arba Kaisle Beis HaMedrash. You know, that's why I was convinced that the reason that I was clean in Eretz Yisrael was because I was in the Dalet Amos Shel Halacha. So, and that was, you know, Megin Umatzli, you know. I open up a Nefesh HaChaim Shar Dalet, you know, he talks about it, and in other places, you know, so, oh, there's a little background noise. And so I thought that that was why I was clean during, oh, there's a little background noise, like blowing in the phone or something. Whoever just got on, it's you, buddy. So please help us out, Chaver, or Chavira. So that was a problem. What was I saying? So I thought that I was being saved from sin by doing, now by the time I was already 19 in Eretz Yisrael in Yeshiva, my acting out was already going on for years. And being free of it, and oh, there's blowing in the phone again. Whoever just got on, if you can please do something like mute your phone, that would really help. Thank you. So, thank you, Chava. So, I thought that the reason that I was kept clean for that time was because I was in learning and learning and learning, and that the Torah was Megan and Moxley. And when I came home
how do you mute the phone?
Excuse me? How do you mute the phone? But you mute your phone by hitting star six.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're welcome, Chava. That was well done, I have to say. Yesha kochacha. A lot of people are too scared to ask such a simple question. A lot of shame I would be spared in life if I just spoke up the way you did, and you know, that's in a bayishan lame. Thank you. The thought running through my head was that I was being saved from sin by being in Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, right? Then I came home, and for those months or so, and I only sinned once or twice, you know, so that was a big deal for me, and I thought that was a tremendous success in a way. At the same time, I thought it was a tremendous failure. When I came back from Eretz Yisrael, I remember I had two feelings. One was that I could have been, and here I am back in America. I could have been a Lechatchila man, and now I'm a Bidyeved man living in a Bidyeved land and making my Bidyeved plans for myself, you know? And that's the message that I was given in Eretz Yisrael, that if you stay here, you're a Ben Aliyah, you know, you're one of the Ben Aliyah of the door. And if you leave, because you're in Eretz Amin, Kimishen Lamalakai, and also because you're not in Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, really, and this and that. So that was, I mean, there is room for such belief, for such a shita, you know, for such an opinion, definitely. And, you know, but for me, that was highly toxic, not during the time I didn't see the problem, but when I left, I had to pay the piper big time for being on such a high in Eretz Yisrael, because the flip side of it is that when I leave, I'm a loser. So that, I wasn't prepared for that at all. My people in Eretz Yisrael didn't prepare me for that. Rav Pinchas Scheinberg tried to prepare me for that, but he didn't really know what to say, you know. But anyhow, so I came back to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, I came back to America, and my acting out grew and grew and grew. And then when I got married, I thought, as many Sfarim, like Rabbi Nachman writes this Beferish, that Rabbi Nachman writes that after a certain age, after 18, your bones start to rot, which has to do with your atzamas are white, and it comes from the lovin of the father, from the sperm of the father, and therefore it's, you know, part of that whole issue, and it starts to rot because, you know, once you're 18 and you're not with a woman, you're not married, so then you're going to masturbate a lot, and it's going to screw you up. So, you know, Rabbi Nachman basically writes, of course, he's writing this in 1750, you know, so, you know, when he lived, you know, it's like, what? This is not the same as it is today. It, you know, people in those days, Taka did get married at 13, 14, 15, 16, 18, you know, Bochum 18, a Bochum 21 not married was weird back, really weird back in those days. And, you know, the girls were 16 also, you know, so it was like, it's very, very different. But anyway, our mentality was different. Families were different. Lots of things were very, very different. The average guy in the street had more emuna in the existence of a God, and that life is being watched by God, and that you're going to have to pay after you die. The average guy in the street had far more simple poshita emuna in those facts than most of us will probably ever achieve. That's not an insult to Yiddishkeit. That's just a historical fact. If you look back, you'll see. If you read a little bit of the writings of lots of people, just their memoirs and their diaries and stuff, it's pretty shocking. But anyway, but even if that's not true, you know, even if that's wrong, even if it's not true, still. A lot of Rabbanim today give advice to guys, and they say, when you get married, everything's going to be fine. And I have a piece that I wrote on Guard Your Eyes, I think, called Being Engaged Will Save You from Your Yetzer Hara. And I'm not saying that it won't. It will. Being engaged will. But I mean engaged in a different way. And I'll explain as I go on. Obviously, as most of us find out, getting married just makes the problem worse. Or if it doesn't make it worse in terms of the acting out that we were doing before, it makes it worse in other ways. Because now we're bigger fakers than we were before. We're bigger liars. We're hiding even more carefully and in a more elaborate way. We're hiding our problem even more. Well, it's shalom bias, you know, mishanim et neha shalom, what do you expect? You know, I can't tell you how many guys, I was just telling a guy, two guys actually yesterday, new guys from Guard Your Eyes who called me, about, you know, this concept of, I spoke to these guys who are, you know, looking at pornography frequently and masturbating themselves or, you know, phone sex or chatting sex, you know, and, or prostitutes even, you know, or other things that, you know, are like shocking, you know what I mean? Or even not those things, just have it clearly have a complete double life. You know, where, you know, it's like the stuff they're doing, if their wife would know, they would never tolerate it. Possibly never even be able to continue being married to them if they didn't stop, you know. And some of them wouldn't be able to be married to them at all, even if they did stop, if they knew the truth of what this man or woman was doing, you know. One girl I was actually going back and forth with Guard the other day, because there's a girl who was emailing him about some behavior. Can you try to mute your phone, Chaver? Just hit *6, okay? Thank you, Chaver, or Chavira. So she was emailing about, you know, she's engaged and she's doing all these behaviors and stuff, and she's not telling the chassan because, you know, you don't want to stare the. It's like, okay, you know. So in other words, then I speak to these people sometimes on the phone, and I ask them, well, what's going, you know, this and this, and then so how are things, you know, and like one of the last things we talk about is, so how are things at home? Not because I'm interested in, are you getting enough sex at home? So that'll explain why you're acting out. No, because that's not true. But I mean, at all. It's quite the other way around. It's because you're acting out that you have no real intimacy, and therefore you know you're fake, and therefore the sex can't really be to your satisfaction. But a lot of people say, oh, it's wonderful, you know what I mean? We have wonderful shalom bias. And I often ask them, would you call it shalom bias if the reason that you're feeling so close is because she doesn't know the truth about you? Isn't that the reason that you have shalom bias, because she doesn't know the truth about you? Now, if it was you sinned, you know, and she doesn't know that you sinned, you know, so that's not what I mean. I mean that you're actively sinning, doing stuff that she would consider a sin to her, a sin not to God, to her, and repeatedly, and therefore you're really not the same person that she sees because she doesn't know. And this is repeated, continual, every day, every week, and goes on for years and years, and it's very involved behaviors, searching and searching and searching and this and that, and even, you know, having sex with yourself, which is what masturbation is, and she doesn't know, and therefore she's, you know, you have quote-unquote shalom bias. Do you call that shalom bias? If you look up shalom bias in any safer if you look up shalom bias in any sefer or any book, are you going to find that definition? That shalom bias is that the spouse is very nice to the other spouse and respects them a lot because they don't really know who they are, or they're just not aware of the true nature of that person. Is that how you would characterize shalom bias? Obviously not. It's not shalom bias. It's something else. It's just trickery. And therefore, you know, guard your eyes. the big emphasis is on, and it should be, in terms of, you know, because Guard Your Eyes is a Jewish website, and it's about Cronkite. The emphasis is on desire, right and wrong, you know, bechira, stopping doing wrong and living right instead. So the emphasis naturally is on the badness or the wrongness of these terrible behaviors, and the word terrible in that is used in that way. The fact, though, is that for most addicts so far that I've ever met, and including myself, it's true that the things that we do are terrible and na-na-na-na-na. But if we were alcoholics, the entire problem would be the same in many respects, even though it's not a sin to drink alcohol, and alcoholics hide their alcoholic, you know, behaviors from their spouses as well as much as they can and from everybody. There's a tremendous, if you read through the stories in AA, in the back of the book, you'll hear so much isolation. Don't you relate to that? You know, that's the same in that respect. But anyway, so the spouse is all, the ick issue, especially for a frum sex addict, especially for a frum, much more so even than for a non-frum or a Gentile non-religious sex addict. The biggest issue is the isolation and the lying. The faking. That's the prime issue, is the faking. Not the wrongness, but the fakingness. That you have a life and you're faking to your Eishes Chekecha, if you're a guy. You're faking to Eishes Chekecha, who you really are, and that's why you have Shalom Bayis. And I'm not saying that you should tell your wife everything and that's the answer to your problems. That may be necessary, it may not be necessary. But one way or another, that's not the answer to your problems, except stopping the faking is definitely the answer. You know, from now on, stopping the faking is definitely the answer. It's not about controlling and working and trying. It's about you need to be who you are. If you want to have any real relationship, you have to have Tohu Kabara. Otherwise, there is no relationship here. It's not an issue of Shalom Bayis. You're a fake. The reason that there's Shalom Bayis is because she doesn't know the truth about you. That's not Shalom Bayis at all. So, and Shalom Bayis within a person, if you look in the Sfarim, you'll see there's Shalom Bayis, meaning with the person you're living with, and then there's Shalom Bayis in your own bias, in yourself. You don't have Shalom. It's Kiyam Nigrash. And everyone here knows what that is. You're Kiyam Nigrash. If you're an addict and you're not clean and at peace, you have the AA 12 steps talk about serenity as the goal, spiritual experience, serenity. God grant me the serenity is the ikkar. How do you have serenity? To thine own self be true, to be at peace with yourself. Shalom bein adam la'atzmo, as has become very popular in all these svarim, you know, in many svarim in the past, you know, 50 years. So this is what if you look in Da'as Atzmacha, you'll see this a lot in, you know, the Rabbi Tomer Schwartz in the Vavi Mishkan Evna series. Peace within yourself, or about yourself, identifying with your neshama, etc. And you can talk about your neshama tahir, your neshama tahir, your neshama tahir all the time and how you can't do this, da-da-da-da-da. But if the way you behave turns out to be against what you really are, you won't achieve peace. And the issue isn't stimming the two together, figuring out how the two can live together. That's what the Yidden did at Har Sinai after we served the ego, or who, you know, if it was the, like Zohar Kodesh says, if it was the, what's his name, the Erev Rav, so that, you know, we didn't, but the, you know, which is convenient, but the, what's his name? The, you know, so, the, you know, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down, he broke the luchos. Why did he break them? Why didn't he save them for later? You know, strange thing. It's a very strange thing when you think about it, really, that Hashem didn't tell him to break them. He did it midaito, completely midaito. Why did he break them? So some people say because he wanted to show the Yidden that you can't compromise now. I can't bring it down. Hold on to it. We'll figure out how to make this all work out. At the beginning of a relationship, you can't do that. You can't start a relationship by by compromise in terms of values, you know, somehow it can stem. No, it can't stem. This is it. This is forget it. You know, we have to start fresh now. We have to break it in order to be honest. You broke it. You broke the bris. It's time to break these luchos and live with the truth. That's shalom bias. That's shalom bias. That's serenity. That's living with the truth. That's precious. Yasha kochacha sheshibarta. That's shalom bias. The opposite of shalom bias is compromise to try to live with both and pretend both sides, you know, and this. So that's the opposite of shalom bias. Mishanah of Ne'ah Shalom is the opposite of true shalom bias in a case where a person's an addict or habitually doing something. That's not a time for shalom bias. So, I mean, it's not a time for shinoi, you know, of emes. So anyway, back to the Bein Zmanim now. So in the case of Bein Zmanim, you have to understand the ikar problem is living a double life. That's the ikar issue, not desire, not lust, desire, sinning, doing, behaving badly. Those aren't the issues. That's not the problem, and the solution isn't trying to be better. That's not the solution. The solution is trying to be honest. Lack of honesty and living with a lack of honesty comes from arrogance. A lot of people say that I feel so depressed, I have no self-esteem, and they call Rabbi Twersky, they read his books, like yourself and others will too, this and that, no. I need self-esteem. He learned that from Adler, one of the Talmidim of Freud, and that's the whole thing of self-esteem. Fine. It's all nice. The problem, though, is that I believe for most of us, the big problem with self-esteem is from arrogance, from pride. In other words, I have this incredibly beautiful image of who I really am and who I'm supposed to be, and I'm falling so short that I'm depressed. In other words, I'm a loser because I'm really so great, and here I'm falling so short. Honesty is humility. Humility is the honesty to say, I don't know really what I am, but I'm not the Gadol Hador. I'm not destined to be Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And I don't know, I'm trying to learn Mishnayos and Gemara and Zohar and Halacha and Hashkafa and Chassidus and this and that. And it's like, I see I'm never going to be one of the Gadol Hador. Philadelphia Yeshiva isn't going to make me the Rosh Yeshiva. I don't even go to Philadelphia. How am I going to be the next Rosh Yeshiva? How am I going to end up on the Moetzes Gadol HaTorah? How am I going to be the one that people speak about in Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Akiva, and this and that? How am I going to be? I'm not measuring up to this image that I have of myself. I'm not known as the guy in the family who's the biggest tzaddik. I'm not known as this. I'm not known as that. And subconsciously, or sometimes not so subconscious, I'm the best guy in yeshiva. How many times do I hear that on Guard Your Eyes and read it and get emails from guys? More than 10 so far, the same exact story that I can remember right now. And there's been more than that that I can't remember. You know, I'm the best guy in yeshiva. They all think I'm learning the best. The shidduchim are being read to me, even though I'm only 21, because I'm the best guy in yeshiva, and really I'm masturbating every day, and I don't know what to do. Blah, 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 blah. What's going on? You know, there's this image sometimes of you're the best guy in yeshiva. I'm the best guy in yeshiva when you're really not sometimes, you know. And sometimes you are in some ways, but you realize that, you know, there's a tremendous pressure that comes with that. That if other people expect me to be then my, you know, Hashem is medaktik, you know, so they can chut asaira, right? Hashem is close to, you know, ruch saara is, you know, it's a, you know, once I'm so high, I'm so great, then the diktik is chut asaira, but it's not Hashem being medaktik chut asaira because of small infractions. It's me on myself. I feel like a huge failure because I am so arrogant to assume that I'm supposed to really be the next Yosef Yeisel of, you know, Nevardik. I'm supposed to be this great person. I'm supposed to be the Rebbe. Or as Reb Noach Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, used to say, we all secretly desire to be the Mashiach himself. You know, we all want to save the world secretly. We all want to be the great one who saves the world. So not all of us, but maybe do. But if you find me, you show me a guy who's got horrible self-esteem and yet is very firm and tries so hard, I'll show you a guy who has an inflated ego and somewhere inside him believes he's supposed to be a Kadosh Venora. That person is destroying himself by having an inflated view of what he really is supposed to be. And that's why he has poor self-esteem. The self-esteem issue is from pride, really, in that case. In other words, because I have an inflated view, therefore I will automatically fall short. So this is part of the pressure on Yeshiva Bochram. And why so many of them don't make eye contact. If you visit a yeshiva, walk through, you know, and you'll see very few bochurim make eye contact and say, hi, good morning, something. It's very, very rare, very little eye contact. There's a certain problem there. We're all falling short. It's killing our self-esteem, and it's because of pride. It's the opposite of what people think. It's not because you have too much humility or, you know, too much false humility, you know. No. It's because of too much pride. The expectations are magia li madregas. You know, I expect madregas, I expect success. So just getting down to it now, what's with all this emphasis on truth and falsehood, I'm trying to point in two directions regarding Bein HaZmanim. One is that when we come home from Bein HaZmanim, and we have high expectations of ourselves, now that we're in Olam Hazeh with the Chutz La'aretz kind of thing, we're expecting to be people who are Hechera mentioned, you know, Luft mentioned. We're expecting to be Hechera mentioned. And when we're brought into Olam Hazeh, we realize the truth is that we're just people, you know, and that's a big disappointment. And we have a hard time adjusting to real life stuff, which brings me to the reason that marriage doesn't work and what I mean by get engaged and it'll help. Real life doesn't help because getting married doesn't help because real life is really our problem. When we're in yeshiva, we have escaped from Hazeh. Being in a real yeshiva, especially in Eretz Yisrael, a foreign country, being away from home, being in a yeshiva, especially in a foreign country, those are factors that separate us from real life as we know it. In other words, we're the real pressures of family, my sister, my brother, my mother, my father, my this, my that, and then when you get married, your wife's will of how she wants this to run and how she cares about this and how she cares about that, and expenses and where the kids are going to go to yeshiva and where the kids are who's going to babysit for the kids, you know, which babysitter do you trust? If you have to work, do you not have to work? Should the wife stay home? Should the husband stay home? Should this stay home? Which kind of curtains do you have to get? It's very nice. I always imagine I was in yeshiva. I always imagine I'm going to give my wife Olam Hazeh. She'll be in charge of the curtains and I'll be in charge of this. And it's like she wants to share in a lot of these things. And decisions about which babysitter to use, who cares already, you decide, you're smart. That's all me disengaging. My lies about, oh, you make all these decisions, sweetheart, I trust you, it's exactly like the typical man who wants to go bowling every night with his friends, he wants to have a beer every night when he comes home, just leave me alone already, I worked so hard, don't involve me in these matters, they're your area. It's a lie. It's disengaging from real life. That's disengagement from real life. And it brings two people apart because it brings the person apart himself. Instead of connecting us to ourselves by engaging in real living and the decisions that are necessary and being part of real life, we're apart from. We separate from it. By pretending that we're doing what the author of Slobodka says, which is You know, there's a joke. It's a funny mice. The Alto of Slobodka got married, and they asked his wife something. His wife said, "You know, he said that I'm going to get all the Olam Hazeh stuff. You know, me, his wife, and he's going to take care of all the issues of Olam Haba stuff." And she laughed and she said, "But you don't know my husband. For him, everything is Olam Haba stuff. What curtains to get is Olam Haba stuff, because is it ostentatious or is it in good taste where it shows Kavod HaTorah and Gadlus HaAdam, but it's not arrogant. You know what I'm saying? Like, is this and that, you know, it's all under, he's going to be in control of everything. He's like, he's tricking me in a way." She was laughing. He's tricking me. It's like, he says, "Oh, you have the whole Olam Hazeh." There is no such thing as Olam Hazeh for him. It's all Olam Haba. Everything is a spiritual issue for him. So he's going to be engaged in everything. That's a healthy man. I'm not saying that it's healthy for him to, I'm not judging whether it's healthy for him to consider everything Olam Haba issue. I'm not getting into that part. I'm just saying he's a healthy man. Why? It's clear that he was healthy. Why? Because you see that he was going to get, she knew it, he was going to be engaged in the, who's going to be the child, this, what do you, how do you steer with the kid here, what do you do with this, what do you do with the curtains and the furniture, and how do you arrange the, which house to buy, and everything. He was going to be deeply, deeply involved, just the way she was going to be involved, because it matters to him. Why did it matter to him? Because it's Olam, because it's, you know, Ruchnias. That's not the point. The point is that it mattered to him, because it's their life together. And that's togetherness. And the more we separate, the more we're lying to ourselves. When we come home from Bein HaZmanim, what happens to us is, what happens to a Bachar is, two things, besides the letdown from yeshiva, which I described before. Two things happen. One is that the Bachar is automatically, the Bachar is automatically brought to a realization that this is Olam Hazeh, this is real life, and he doesn't quite like it. It's not easy. It's really not, learning Torah is very easy, very easy. Especially if it's 24/7, you know, especially if you're 18 hours a day learner guy, that's the easy life, because you're in Gan Eden, in Dalad Kosla Bis HaMedrash, you're in Gan Eden, you know, face it, you're in Gan Eden, everybody knows it. There's no petty little issues, there's no curtains, there's no furniture, there's no money worries, there's no anything. Your parents are supporting you, you know. It's all taken care of, you know. All the stuff you got to do is all taken care of. What do? One thing. Learn and steig. Grow and learn. Aliyah, aliyah, aliyah. It's very simple, one-track living. Some people expand it to chesed and this and that, but still it's very focused, which is very, very easy on the psychology of a person. Coming home, being in, you know, being home with your parents, that's a problem, because you're out of yeshiva, you're a fish out of water. You've left Gan Eden, and now you're in Olam Hazeh, where it's b'zeis apecha toch alechem. And even if you're supported al shulchan shel avichem, even still, it's still b'zeis. It's still, you're living among the b'zeis apecha toch alechem people. You've joined the great unwashed. This is not a comfortable place for us to be. It's real life is relationships. Your aunt is coming for the Seder, and she's going to say stupid things about Yiddishkeit again, and you know, and this and that. And I remember sitting the whole day of the Seder with a Me'amloes Haggadah and a Maharal Haggadah and the regular Haggadah, which had, you know, 70 million Perushim there, the Migal Eder, and figuring out what vort I was going to say for him, or what vort I was going to say for this irreligious cousin and brother, something, and this and that. And a frum guy who has only frum family and stuff will also figure out what vort to say here, what vort to say there. You know, And yeah, is that engaging or is that disengaging? You know, it was actually disengaging because it was really all about me. It wasn't about them. It was about me. I think it's about them because I'm trying to help them and change them and this and that, but that's all. I'm powerless over other people, and I'm trying to change them. It's all fantasy. And the reality was that when I had a Rebbe in Yeshiva who I spoke to in desperation, Gevalt, it was like the sixth or seventh year that I was home with it. No, it was more than that. I was home with this kind of thing. And he says to me, just focus on having a great time together, and you'll do a ton more good than any vort you're going to say. And this Rebbe who said this was the most intensely out of Olam Hazeh Rebbe in Yeshiva. And I was shocked. You know, here he says, just focus on having a great time together with them. I didn't know how to do that, because I was still trying to bring the Dalet Kos Leibeis HaMedrash with me. I was trying to stay disengaged from Olam Hazeh by being in my spiritual, you know, world, fantasy world. I was still pretending I was in Gan Eden. And I couldn't stand being kicked out of Gan Eden in this gullus here. I just couldn't stand it. And for that reason, I couldn't be at peace at home. And I was Kiyam Nigrash because I didn't have the simplicity of being in that Shaolin temple called Yeshiva. And therefore I had to act out because I couldn't have peace inside myself. I had to act out. I had to have the stability of acting out sexually. There's nothing that compares to that stability, you know, because I know exactly what to expect and I do it and I get it and everything, you know. Real life is scary. Real life, you know, for a person who's used to Dalet Hamasa Halacha Bilvad, real life is scary. And that's who I was, you know. And in my recovery, in sobriety over the years, I have met lots of from Yidden who are not addicts. And I look at them and I watch how they behave. And there are a lot of people who are sick. Okay, fine. Everybody has diseases, mental illness, etc. But when I find the well-adjusted ones, I look at them and I see they're seamless. There's no separation and categorization in their lives. They're just as calm in yeshiva and happy in yeshiva as they are at home sometimes. These are calm people who are adjusted well. They're not like, oh, leaving, you know, Godland, and now I'm at home. It's, you know, and I thought that I had that before because I thought, no, Hashem is everywhere. Shulchan Aruch is everywhere. It doesn't matter if I'm at home or if I'm in yeshiva, but it's not that way. It's not that way. When you're at home, you need to, the Gemara says, bend down and marry a woman. What does that mean? It says, bend down and marry a woman. The pshat is, that a woman's not sitting in yeshiva learning 12 hours a day, okay? She's not. Your home is going to be a Beis HaMikdash Ma'at, but it's not going to be a Beis HaMedrash Ma'at. It's not. It's a different world. And you need to, if you're going to succeed at home, you need to learn how to bend down and realize that I'm in Olam Hazeh. This is what God created me for. If you have a bumper sticker that says, I'd rather be learning Torah, rip it off your car because it's making you act out sexually. It's exactly the wrong message. You know, whether you're at home, whether you're in yeshiva, God is the same and Avodas Hashem is the same. And it's all the same. And if you can't see it that way and you're still acting out sexually, I want to just give you a message that you're not going to succeed ever until you change and you learn how to change in a peaceful way. And if you look at all the Gedolim Tzadikim and stuff, especially the American ones who lived in our kind of world, and you see them, you know, and you see how they fear Zech at home, you'll see that they do two things. They're adjusted well at home and happy. They express themselves honestly, and they're not like fighting to kind of pretend while they're at home that they're happy and that they're, you know, hey, I'll throw you a bone and be involved in all of that while I'm at home. But really, I'm somewhere else, you know. They don't really live that way. That's not the way that they really are. That's one issue. That's one major issue of Bainas Madhan. That's why getting married never works for addicts, because getting married plunges you into Olam Hazeh. It plunges you into Olam Hazeh. And when you're in yeshiva, it's when you're in Frumkeit, and that's all that's on your head all the time, you can pretend that you're in Gan Eden. And when you're married and you have a relationship to maintain and a life to maintain, life, L-I-F-E, the four-letter word, real life, two four-letter words, it becomes virtually impossible for a person who thinks that he's spiritual super guy to actually maintain himself. And he's going to be acting out a heck of a lot more. And that's what happens in Bainas Madhan. Bainas Madhan, you leave the Arba Kosla Beis HaMedrash, and it's not that Torah is not being Megan and Motzli now. The issue now is that the fantasy is over. The game's over. You're in real life now, and you don't know how to engage and stay connected to people. You know how to disengage and stay parush from Olam Hazeh, prisha and kedusha. Now, the makom sheyesh kedusha, there's also prisha. You know, so that you know, but you don't know, you know, how to be part of, you know, how to be apart from. That's very, very hard. The other reason that kids act out a lot during Bainas Madhan is because, and this goes for adults too, is because this is where you grew up as an acting out youngster. This is where you learned how to sexually masturbate and look at pornography, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is where you started. This is where you cut your teeth over here. This is where you learned. So Mamela, it continues when you come home. Your mother treats you like her child. You're back to being the 11-year-old who discovered his penis and masturbation and all this other stuff. You're back to being the kid who struggled with the schmutz and the porn and this and that and hiding from your father and your mother and this. And they start nagging you again. Oh, do this, do that, do the other thing and this. And come here, Chaim, come here, Maishi, come here. And, you know, it's like, you know, and they treat you like a kid because you're their child. And they don't know, like, what, should they stand up for you now? Like, what? You're their child. To them, you're the same guy. They didn't even know you were masturbating every day in the bathroom. You know, they didn't even know all this stuff. You were struggling, quote unquote, with porn and the internet. You know, they didn't know this stuff anyway either. Usually we hid this stuff from them, right? That's all we are, is right. Guard your lies. So that's the problem. So you come home and it's the same relationship that you had, and you become the same child. You could be 50 years old sometimes, and it still happens. You know. So that's something really essential to recognize, that it's not them, it's us. We change, we become the child, that the masturbating child that we were. We become the porn, you know, involved child that we were before, you know. And that's a big problem. And we start acting out again when we come home, and we start falling, quote unquote, when we come home, because of all those reasons. And the answer to those things, and by the way, if you think that that's not true, I have a sponsee who didn't believe it, that he was becoming that child again, and yet all he shares with me sometimes for weeks and stuff is back and forth, weiter and weiter, how his mother treats him like a child, and it annoys him, and this, and he didn't see it. He didn't see it during all the time I was telling him, you know, you come home, you become that child again, so of course you're acting out, because you are that 12-year-old guy who's going and hiding in the bathroom with the dirty picture that you found, and, you know, acting out with the mouth dry, the hands shaking, you know, it happens all over again. You discovered it when you're 12. That's why a lot of us become, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old, et cetera, and we're still acting out, and we feel like such a piece of dreck. Why? Because we know that we're really, when we're doing this stuff and searching and searching and searching, we're turning into that 12-year-old again, into that 10-year-old again, into that 12, 13-year-old kid again. And here I am, 40 years old, and I'm a 15-year-old kid. What's going on? You know, that's the double life, really. The double life isn't, I'm hiding and she doesn't know. No. That's a double life, legabi them. But le'umas, myself, the double life is, I'm that kid who started masturbating. You never change. You don't become an adult who's masturbating. You're still ultimately that child. And that's terribly disconcerting to a person, because you really don't know who you are when you're doing that, and it drives us crazy. Aside from the lying, aside from the faking, which is obviously, like I said before, the big issue in terms of the interpersonally. So anyhow, the answer to all these problems is to become unified, Yached Levavenu, like Mesil Shisharim ends with that pasuk there. You know, Yached Levavi, Yira Shemecha. What's the Yached Levavi? Rabbi Yaakov Kamensky talks about that. Yiched Levavo, Yaakov, it says in the Tefillah for Mayim, we're going to say in a few weeks. Yiched Levavo, you know, and he pulled the Vigal, you know, Evan, Miber Mayim, you know. So Mephoshim types that it wasn't a spiritual, magical thing, but it was the power that a man has inside him we don't typically use because we don't have Yichud Alev. We don't know how to focus. So the karate people talk about this all the time. You can achieve tremendous power if you learn how to focus. That's what some of the Mephoshim, I'm serious, some of the Mephoshim say that's the pshat what Yaakov Avinu did. It wasn't magic. It was Yichud Levavo, and the Gal Evan made me bear Mayim. You know, if you have Yichud HaLev, there's tremendous power in a human being that God has given us, and that's the connection with God, and it's tremendously powerful, and it will never give you or me, if you're an addict, the power to control and enjoy lust, just like it'll never give an alcoholic the power to control and enjoy alcohol. In recovery, we don't look for power over alcohol. We don't look for power over lust. We don't look for power over, I was powerless when I was an addict, and now I finally, the program gave me power over lust. That's not what we're looking for, power over lust. We're looking for freedom from lust. We're looking for the power to live. Not the power to live clean, the power to live even though we're clean. Because as we know, if we really think it over, the problem that we have, if we're addicts, is not lust, desire, sin, schmutz. The problem is living real life. That's the problem that we have. We don't really know how to live real life. We live real life only if we're on our terms, if we're medicated and enjoying and doing this and that. That's how we know how to live. We know how to live with big, giant struggles against the Yetzer Hara that distract us from real life. You think that's better? You know, struggling. Hashem, you know, loves the struggle of the addict. He loves the struggle. You know, it's all talk to try to just keep playing with it. The Kutzker says, you wrestle with somebody, you get just as dirty. That's nothing good. You know, you want to be free of it means that you're free of it. You don't wrestle with it anymore. That's what the alcoholics talk about, surrender. Get out of the boxing ring. Fall onto your knees and give up. You know, give up. You lost the fight. If you're an addict, you're a loser. You lost the fight. It's not about winning the fight now. It's about being free from the fight. You know, that's the key. And that comes from engaging in real life. That allows a person to engage in real life instead of engaging in the battle against the Yetzer Hara. So a frum person who is not an addict, definitely engage in the battle of the Yetzer Hara. Rigzu ve'al techeto, imilu ve'vavchem, al-mishkavchem, ve'domusela. Fight. But if you're a failure addict, if you are an addict, so then it's not time to fight. It's time to surrender, and it's time to say, I can't be in this fight. And it's an entirely new way of doing it that you cannot just do on your own. You need to learn how to actually fear zech and do that in real life from other addicts, because just by hearing these words from me, you're not going to know how to do it. So there are a lot of people who will teach you, who will share what they do, and you can learn from them. It's not a Jewish problem, it's not a frum problem, and it's not a Torah problem. It's a Derech Eretz problem. And the answer is, like the Torah is munach for everybody, for every yid to take, Derech Eretz is munach for every human being to take. It's ready. It's waiting for us, you know. And that's what the 12 steps people share, Derech Eretz. And it's kadma la Torah. It's a priority before Torah, first priority, you know. So if you want to be free, engage in real life. Don't get engaged to a woman. Don't get engaged to a guy to save yourself. Get engaged in real life. And Bein HaZmanim is an opportunity to engage in real life instead of pretend that I'm not really here. No, I'm going to put on an act that I'm interested. And no, that's not going to work. It's an opportunity to engage in real life. The Shla HaKadosh says abolish the whole thing back in 1600, 1650. So, okay, that's one thing. But if it's not going to be abolished, if you're not going to be leaving yeshiva, I mean, if you are going to be leaving yeshiva, a few times a year, and if you are going to be getting married and having a real life and all this stuff, so then you know what? It's time. It's time to learn how to do that. It's time to learn how to live real life. And I'm just going to end with two things, and you can fit them in here if you like. Chuck C. says, great alcoholic says, you can't think yourself into right living. You can only live yourself into right thinking. And two, Sandy Beach, another great alcoholic, a student of his, actually said that the solution, that the problem we have isn't alcohol. The problem we have is sobriety. Drinking isn't really our problem. Our problem is sobriety. The thing that vexes us and brings us to drink is life. Life sucks. As Mesillas Yesharim says clearly in the Ve'er Klal Chovos Adam Ba'olamo, life sucks and then you die. That's what he says. Life sucks and we don't know how to deal with this life. We don't know how to, it's just too complicated. It's too annoying. It's too petty. It's too I love Haza. It's too this. It's too that. Those are all excuses. They're all excuses. And there's a tons of religious excuses for putting down life and not appreciating it and not wanting to engage in it. Tons of excuses. And they're all just tritzim, as we say in Yiddish. Tritzim. That's all they are. I want to stay disengaged. And then we have the ultimate teretz of all. It's shalom bayis, mishanim tnei shalom. So we can be totally false people now, with the plumba of Yiddishkeit on it, chas v'shalom. Totally false people. And we can't do that. If you want to be in recovery, you have to understand. If you want to be sober, really, you have to understand, I think, that the issue is, am I engaging in real life? God, help me engage in real life, because that was always my problem. Sobriety, in other words, living, real life living without alcohol to drug it away. Real living has always been my problem. Engagement in real life has always been my problem. And my solution has always been alcohol, has always been lusting and acting out. And there's two sides of acting out. One is the sexual pleasures and sexual libido, and the other part of the acting out, which is part of the acting out, is the tshuva. Tshuva is part of acting out. It's been the distraction from real life. Oi, gevalt, what I did, oi, the sperm came out, oi, vey, and I have a mikvah, and here, and aseres tehillim, and then there's this and that, and I don't know, the whole mindset of gevalt, it's all distracting myself from real life and making some issues that are far bigger that I have to deal with. It's all part of the game, you understand? And that's what Bachrim have been doing. That's what we've always been doing. It's all a game. It's all a trick to try to disengage from real life and have no real responsibilities. Oh, I have real responsibility. I'll tell you, you think my responsibility is this? I have to do tshuva over this horrible avera. That's my responsibility. If you knew the heavy burden that I carry, it's all a fantasy life. Fantasy life. Narishkeit. Literally, Narishkeit. Childishness. And so growing up is what this program is really about. And that's what I'm sharing, is growing up. People think 12 steps is about surrender, give up, let go, this, that. It's the opposite of really taking responsibility for yourself. Because look, I'm a victim, I'm powerless, blah, blah, blah. Not true. 12 steps is about one thing, really. Accepting self-responsibility. Im ein ani li, mi li. That's the entire program. Anyway, so for Bein Hazmanim, the recipe is engage, engage, engage. Connect, connect, connect. Every opportunity, connect, connect, connect. Engage, engage, engage. That's the That's the recipe for success. Any disengagement, look out. It's going to cause problems. You know, it's going to really cause problems. Any disengagement is going to cause problems. You know, except disengagement from sick people. Now, if people are coming home to families where there's a lot of abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, et cetera, so then obviously you need to learn how to disengage and protect yourself. But that's not what this talk has been about. And if that's what your situation is, obviously you need guidance from a healthy person who is experienced in family dynamics. And that could be your rav or therapist or somebody else. I don't know. Anyway, Hatzlacha Rabba. And anybody who has questions can email me. It's on the, you know, the address is available right there on the website. Thanks a lot. Hatzlacha Rabba. Bye-bye. And have a good Yom Tov.